This is Audible.
Swing Shift 3, written by William D. Arend, performed by Andrea Parsnow. Chapter 1, Scalding Moments. Staring at the long path that led up from the gate, Gus had second thoughts.
"It'll be fine, Indigo," Melody said from directly beside him. "We know them. They're friends and clients."
"Uh-huh," Gus said gruffly. "We really are friends," Cat said from inside his own mind. The fact that Cat, or Kit, as Trish knew her, was inside his mind was actually the lion's share of the problem.
"What? There's no reason to be angry. You were already expecting it. And having grown up with your father, you're not even mad," Cat said with a laugh. "You're just annoyed."
"Could you not, please? Do you know how hard it was growing up with my dad? I couldn't even feel it when he'd break into my mind. You're more like someone crashing a dump truck through my front door."
"Yes, I get the impression your father is incredibly talented and skillful. Perhaps even more so than I. He just lacks the raw power I have. Or that you have."
Turning to look at Melody, Gus sighed. The contractor who was his wife smiled at him when she caught his gaze. A magician of sorts who bound herself to spirits to gain abilities and powers. Then she bound partners to those same contracts to help offset the costs she took on.
"Hi there," she said, grinning at him. "Going my way, handsome."
With pitch black eyes, black hair pulled back in a tight ponytail behind her head, and a wild, blazing grin stretched across her lovely mouth, she was the picture of what he'd come to describe as eerily pretty. Indigo-colored symbols glowed brightly along the outer edge of her face, all the way from her hairline to her chin in a solid line. A hint of a red dot between her eyes was just barely starting to come to life as well.
"I bet I could rock your whole world and have you coming back for more,"
Melody murmured, taking a step closer to him, pressing her shoulder against his.
"In fact, you do this little job for me, and we'll see if we can't get a seatbelt imprint on my shoulders and hips as you stretch me across the back seat."
Taking in a short breath, Gus shook his head with a grin.
Sure, why not?
Gus said. Reaching up, he lightly pressed a fingertip to the glowing red spot between her eyes. He brushed his finger back and forth across that spot.
"Though, I'd be more than willing to wait until we get back home. I can't imagine that would be very good for your back. Now, wrangle it back in your pants and let's head up, huh?"
Maybe I want it to hurt a little,"
Melody said, lifting her chin up.
"Maybe I want it to say, press here to release on my hip."
"She really does love to fight with you." "It's cute." "I..."
Cat said, and then paused.
I'll let Leanne know you're here. I'll see you inside."
Gus had the distinct impression that Cat had suddenly felt extreme depression. Depression and anger at the fact that Gus was flirting with Melody. Not at either of them directly, but simply that they were able to do such a thing. As if she were envious of them.
"Fine. Whatever you want, Mel. Let's go,"
Gus said, nodding his head to the path. Turning, he started to head up toward the door.
"I love you,"
Melody said loudly. Looking back, he found the contractor hadn't moved from the spot where she stood. She was staring at him with wide eyes.
"I love you, Gustavus Hellstrom. I love you, and I love you,"
Melody said, her voice faltering as he continued to meet her gaze.
"And I love you, Melody Hellstrom,"
Gus said with a smile.
"Now come on, my silly contractor. Let's go get this job."
"Would you love me if this was all wrong?"
Melody asked, not moving from her spot.
"Wrong? What do you mean?
Questioned Gus. Her tone had shifted drastically, and it made him rather nervous.
What if the whole world was just wrong?
Wrong how? You're not really elaborating. You're just saying the same thing again.
Melody grimaced and then looked down and away from him. The grass was apparently less menacing at this moment.
If the world was a dream or a story someone was telling, would you still love me?
Melody asked, her gaze slowly coming back to him. Frowning, Gus was deeply and utterly confused.
You want to know if I love you, if reality was fake, a dream?
Clarified Gus, trying to get to the heart of what she was asking.
Yes, exactly that. Yes, uh-huh.
Melody was nodding her head now, clearly quite happy with the way Gus had phrased it. Thinking about that, Gus tried his darndest to really consider her question.
If the world was fake, would I still love Melody? In other words, if none of this mattered, would my love for her not matter either? I mean, that's kind of a stupid question, isn't it?
Some people would feel that if the world didn't matter, then nothing they did mattered,
Melody murmured, her hands catching at one another behind her back.
If no one was real, you could kill anyone, and none of it would change a thing.
Chuckling, Gus shook his head and then held up his hands.
Maybe I'm a dumbass, but that's just stupid,
said Gus while holding his hands apart in a neutral display.
If the world was fake, I'd say the only thing I knew was real at that point would be my love for you, because it would be the only thing I'd have control over.
Melody blinked once, her face a frozen mask of surprise.
Now come on. Sooner we finish up with this, the sooner I can try to get a seatbelt buckle wedged in your ass.
Gus said with a laugh.
Or did you change your mind on that?
Shooting forward, Melody slammed into him and wrapped him in a hug. A hug that was partially fueled by contractor strength, to the point that it squeezed the air out of his lungs and made him groan. It felt like his bones might break under the force of it.
I love you so much, Gus. My indigo, my one and only,
declared Melody.
Sam was right. I just needed my indigo. I needed you.
Wheezing was about the only thing Gus could do in response. Realizing she was crushing him, Melody let him go and took a step back. She quickly brushed her fingertips at the corners of her eyes, dislodging tears and wiping them away.
Sorry. And yes, before you ask, I mean Sam, the incubus. He's my nephew-in-law, and he's been there for me in my darker moments. He's a very good friend to me and a great husband to Irma. His kids are pretty fun, too. You'll like them once you get to know them, Uncle Gus.
Gus heard a lot of undercurrent in all that. That Sam hadn't just helped Melody, but that she likely owed him, possibly a great deal.
All right, need to see about spending more time with Sam. Make sure I can make a friend out of him. Only met him the one time so far. Got it. A family barbecue at some point. Invite Sam, his family, and your dad over. Have everyone come out or something,
Gus offered. Chuckling at that, Melody wiped at her eyes again.
Yeah, let's do that. The last one was a lot of fun,
mumbled Melody.
Okay, let's go in. I don't look terrible, do I?
Nope. Beautiful as ever, Miss Beautiful Contractor,
Gus said, waiting for Melody to walk past him toward the house. Snorting at that, Melody shook her head.
I'm gonna rock your world for the rest of your life, and that's a long time, you know,
Melody murmured.
I'm aware,
Gus said, as they finally made their way up to the front door. Before Melody could even lift her hand to knock at the door,
It opened. Standing inside the doorway was Kat, one of the owners of Campbell & Campbell Marketing. Dressed in very casual clothes, she looked extremely different from the picture of her in his head. He'd never seen her in anything but business clothes before. Her long, dark brown curls were pulled back behind her head with what he assumed were pins. The smile she directed at him and then Melody gave her a very easy-to-talk-to vibe that was only complemented by her soft brown eyes. For once, he felt like she wasn't staring through his head and pulling out his secrets. Mostly because now that she knew he was a psyker of sorts, she didn't make it a secret anymore when she entered his mind. "I'm so glad you could make it. Leanne is working on something else at the moment, but she'll join us as soon as she can," said Kat, and stepped to the side. "Please, come in, come in. I can handle all the details in the meanwhile. She's just better at the legal aspect than I am, which is what's taking her away from this conversation."
"Not a problem, and I completely understand," Melody said with a chuckle. "I'll be the first to admit that I'm enjoying having others in the company with me now. I don't have to try to wear every hat anymore. Having someone handle legal would be amazing."
"Leanne mentioned that," Kat said, catching Gus's eyes with her own. She gave him a smile as he walked by. "That, and I learned all the details from you, of course. I'm rather surprised you kept my secret from everyone," Kat said.
Didn't seem like it was my secret to share. Get out of my head. It's not polite."
"I never claimed to be polite. And if you want me out, you'll have to work for it," Kat said, and closed the door. "It isn't as if I could stay inside your mind if you didn't want me there."
"Wait, what?"
"Try to enter my mind," Kat said, while holding a hand out toward the hallway. "Please, just go down the hall and we'll be in the living room. We can talk there." Following behind Kat and Melody, Gus did as Kat had instructed. He pushed himself into Kat's mind, not bothering to be gentle or sneaky about it.
"Oof, that's... goodness. A bit more forceful than I was expecting. Though I suppose I deserved that."
Kat's voice rang inside his own mind and in her own thoughts.
"I'm going to eject you now. Pay attention."
Gus had the sensation that his probe into her mind was suddenly discovered. From there, he had the distinct impression that something was built around his probe, as though she walled him off into a strange cocoon. No sooner than he'd been completely wrapped up, where he could no longer see her thoughts, it fell away. He was no longer inside her mind. In fact, her mind now felt like a solid steel wall that had no entry or exit from it.
"You see? It isn't so difficult. Just a matter of realizing that it can be done and how to do it," said Kat,
gesturing to a sofa across from the love seat in front of which she was standing.
"As Leanne said, we need to hire you for some tasks. Jobs. Some legal, some, questionable."
Melody shrugged her shoulders and sat down on the sofa. Then she grabbed Gus by the hand and pulled him down to sit right next to her, close enough that their hips were pressed tightly against each other.
"So long as it isn't too illegal, sure. I'm trying to keep my nose clean now,"
Melody said, wrapping an arm around Gus's hips.
"I have to be good. I have a family, and I can't just flee the country like I would have previously when I got too much heat."
"Oh, this isn't anything too bad. Breaking and entering, maybe some simple robbery, things of that nature,"
Kat said, as if they were discussing nothing more than having breakfast.
"Nothing that couldn't be bought off, and we'll handle any charges that arise from this. That'll be part of the contract."
"Wonderful. That'll make it significantly easier. So, what is it exactly you need?"
"Well, we need to find someone, really. My husband is coming here, to this..."
Kat paused mid-sentence and looked at Gus. As if she remembered something, she shrugged her shoulders.
"This plane. As you know, Leanne and I aren't from this one, nor is Trish. We're all from different ones."
"Uh-huh. And he can't come here without you, opening the door?"
Gus asked, trying to fill in some blanks.
"Exactly that. Opening the door. There's one door that's already open, but
It's not going to be easy to make secure. Doing that with the Silent One watching over it is even less, likely to be pleasant.
The Silent One?
Gus asked, looking from Cat to Melody, wondering if she knew what was going on. Melody, however, had turned rather pale, pale to the point of looking sickly.
Your husband is an enemy of the Silent One?
Melody questioned. Cat's eyebrows twitched, and her face suddenly smoothed out.
Yes, he is. As am I and Leanne, and every other sentient being in this world that knows about him. He destroyed...
Letting out a quick, shaky breath, Cat closed her eyes for a second and turned her face away.
He burned my home plane to the ground. As far as I know, nothing remains of what I once knew. Nothing. My husband and our people apparently escaped to another world,
Cat explained, finally opening her eyes and looking back at Gus and Melody.
So yes, I'm at war with the Silent One, and the person I need you to find is Retribution. The Angel, that is. The Angel of Retribution.
Melody had started to nod her head, but was now shaking it.
You want us to find Retribution? Him specifically?
Melody murmured. Gus really didn't know what was going on here.
Retribution is...
Cat paused, as if to consider her words.
Retribution is the last soldier of the Originator who retained his grace. We could contact him directly and call him back. And if the Originator returned, my husband could easily come here.
While Gus was a mind reader, he was also a detective. Cat was telling him the truth, but in his personal opinion, she'd left something out. Something that was important to her, but not to Gus or Melody.
Would your husband come here even without the Originator?
Gus asked, deciding to prod. Cat's eyes flicked to Gus.
Yes, he would. The door that's already open would be his way in if we weren't able to find Retribution.
And would the Originator follow your husband through that door?
Pushed Gus. He felt like he was on the right track here, that there was more to the Originator and Cat's husband.
My husband... He works with the Originator. Apparently, Leanne and I vanishing onto this plane changed a great number of things, answered Cat, her words slow but deliberate.
In other words, you're asking us to unleash the Originator on this Silent One,
Gus said, boiling everything down to a single point.
Yes.
And the Originator is... I mean, their name makes it sound like they made everything,
Gus said, once more looking between the two women. He is the origin of all things, Cat agreed. All planes, all worlds, all people, all places, all... Everything came from him.
And the Silent One is our big bad.
He is everything wrong with everything, and why this plane has been slowly falling apart,
Melody murmured, looking from Cat to Gus.
He took over after he held the world hostage. The Originator left with many of his forces.
Gus now firmly believed that there was a lot more he needed to know, and no one seemed to want to tell him what was going on.
I'll explain a lot of it later, my Indigo,
Melody promised, her free hand patting his knee. The arm around his hips tightened for a second, pulling him closer.
For now, just know we need to do this. The Silent One is destroying our world through his very nature.
Yes, exactly. We have to remove him from his position, Cat said with a sharp nod of her head. And bringing my husband here will facilitate the Originator's return.
And to do that, we have the door that's guarded, or finding the Angel of Retribution, who's as old as the world itself,
Gus summarized, feeling like this was way beyond what they should be working on.
That'd be it, yes. Though this isn't entirely just finding someone, Kat offered, and then paused. The group of people you've been working against as of late, I'm almost positive that they're involved with Retribution. They were actively tracking several people they believed to be him.
That comment immediately pulled his attention back and made Gus much more willing to dive into this. While the logical part of his mind knew he shouldn't have anything to do with what was going on, from the Fed bombings to the attempts made to murder him to him actually assassinating a presidential candidate, Gus was still a detective. He wanted to solve this whole thing and be able to set it aside.
And for that, we need you and your team, Kat said with a delicate shrug of her shoulders. Because when it comes to actually finding someone, everyone always says to hire the Lark.
Oh, glad to hear my name carry such weight,
Melody replied with a laugh.
I've been thinking about rebranding, though. The Lark name carries some darker baggage with it, too.
Kat chuckled and held her hands up.
That's certainly something to consider. We ended up changing the company name several times to distance ourselves from early problems in our growth, Kat admitted. Buy a company, merge, remove the name, shuffle things around, and then do it all again. It doesn't take too long before most people no longer care. If you grease a few palms along the way, no one will care at all.
Anyway,
Gus said, not really wanting to hear anything about that. He was entirely focused on the council and the fact that they wanted retribution. That by taking this case, he'd probably be working on tracking them down indirectly.
Do you have anywhere for us to start, or are you calling us in because that's the problem?
The latter, I'm afraid. We have a couple pieces of information we can share with you, but I'm nearly certain it's information you likely already know.
Why's that?
Gus asked, curious.
Because of who we stole it from. The Fed, Kat said with a sweet smile.
Chapter 2. Being Prey. Walking into the basement, Gus couldn't recognize it at all. What had once been a second living room and office with several window wells was now more of a dark pit. A large computer setup in the corner dominated the room. 6 monitors, a massive tower that whirred softly, and what looked like a racing chair on wheels. Several bookshelves, a laptop station, a workbench, and a couch filled out the rest of the room. Oddly enough, it felt almost empty considering that it had once been a living room. Gus said eloquently as he reached the bottom of the stairs. The large black racing chair turned slightly, revealing Serafina sitting in it.
Oh, hello, Gustavus,
Serafina said. Serafina wasn't human. She was a unique form of a spirit of knowledge that dealt with electronics and information. Or, to be more precise, she dealt with everything that was the age of the internet. On the outside, she looked normal to most people. The first sign of her oddness to most people would be her personality. Her face was dominated by huge, glowing blue eyes with a pair of glasses parked in front of them. In the dim light of her screens, her pale skin seemed almost luminescent. Her short black hair was pulled back in a ponytail that was tight, but not as tight as she used to make it. It had loosened up some and softened the look of her face.
Sarah,
Gus said, walking over to her.
Looks like you, took over the basement.
Yes, it serves my purposes quite well,
Serafina confirmed, reaching up and pushing at the bridge of her nose, sliding her glasses up.
Chloe and I share the bedroom together. Separate beds. Twin beds, before you ask.
I wasn't going to,
Gus muttered, walking over to her.
Does she think I'm a horn dog or something?
Oh, all right. We can push them together when you finalize my or Chloe's contract, or use your bedroom. Patricia didn't seem concerned either way. She did remind me that Chloe and I would have our contract celebration after Janelle's, which I don't think is quite fair since she's not even here yet. Janelle was already in a contract. She just wasn't a full wife before.
Rapidly feeling out of his depth, Gus stuck his hands in his pockets and came to a stop next to Serafina's desk. She was staring up at him through her glasses, the faint glow of the screens partially reflecting back against her lenses.
There is no reason for us to wait for her when she's not here. You can finish contracting Chloe, then me, and then Janelle when she gets back,
Serafina stated with clear annoyance.
I don't really go against whatever Trish decides for any of that, Sarah,
Gus said, being direct and honest.
She dictates all of those activities. Melody gave her those responsibilities, and I think she's done wonderfully with it so far. And while maybe it pushes the dates out a bit, I'd bet it'll turn out better in the long run.
Serafina frowned at that, her mouth twisting in a partial grimace. Then she sighed, turned her chair back to her computer, and grabbed her mouse.
As you wish, Gustavus,
Serafina murmured.
I am allowed to be disappointed, but I am not angry about it.
That's, very fair and reasonable, actually,
Gus admitted. Then he reached over and laid a hand to Serafina's back.
Hey, we picked up a case today. Campbell and Gamble are hiring us to find someone.
Oh? Huh, fantastic. I've been so bored. I was starting to break into websites just to test their security,
Serafina murmured, turning back to him again.
Melody thinks we can make money that way as well, and it's fun for me.
Yeah, I could see that. As to the case, we've been hired to find a persona by the name of Retribution. The only alias I got for him, or her, I guess, was Angel of Retribution. Kat seemed to think that the Fed had some leads on him,
said Gus, holding Serafina's eyes with his own. Serafina, however, was a statue. She stared at him as if he were suddenly a different person and had begun shouting at her in a foreign language, one that consisted of burps for vowels. Clearing her throat, Serafina clicked her tongue.
I see. The Angel of Retribution. Retribution himself. I really can't see this going very well for us if we do find him,
whispered Serafina.
I've heard stories from my family. We pass down stories, as I'm sure you know. In most of those stories, he's very direct, very black and white. You are either with him or not. There is no ground between, and maybe we should just not have anything to do with him.
Not really a choice, I'm afraid. We've been hired to find him, so we can bring back the originator,
added Gus.
Melody promised me a much deeper explanation, but that has to wait. She's on the phone with what I think is a cousin, or a mother's brother, and that conversation seems rather heated at the moment, so I don't want to butt in.
Swallowing hard, Serafina raised a hand towards her mouth, and then let it drop down into her lap.
The originator? Retribution? Of course, that means the Silent One,
Serafina proposed.
Yeah, his name came up too. You want to tell me about all three? I'm a little clueless on this one. You throw any para in front of me and I can figure it out. Work it and turn it around, but all of this mumbo jumbo seems way beyond me.
It's just the story of creation,
Serafina said in a strange way, no longer looking at Gus. She was staring blankly at his belt buckle now, as if he weren't even there, as though she saw nothing at all. Shaking her head, she took in a shuddering breath.
The originator made everything. He and his angels presided over the universe and all its planes. Everything. Then the Silent One came and battled him, For control. For dominance. For the universe.
Gus was listening intently. This was something he'd never heard before, nor did he honestly quite believe his ears. There was a slew of different religions out there. Too many different beliefs to count, not to mention too many actual confirmations of minor gods, deities, and demigods. Gus couldn't quite believe that there really was a single origination story with all that information in the back of his mind.
And,
Gus finally prompted,
the Silent One won.
Seraphina shrugged her shoulders.
He's been our absent god ever since.
He just won?
Gus repeated, feeling like there was a lot still unsaid there.
I mean, I'm sure something more happened, Gustavus, but it isn't as if I know. I can only repeat the stories that were repeated to me. I'm sorry,
apologized Seraphina.
As for the angels, as far as I know, most of them left with the originator. Retribution and a few others stayed behind, for reasons that I don't know. But he stayed behind and waged a war against the Silent One. A war that's been ongoing ever since, with no end. Every now and then he'll pop up in a story or two, raising a city, destroying something, or simply eliminating a threat.
Raising a city? As in murdering an entire city?
Gus asked.
Yes. Retribution is... he's retribution. There is no mercy in him. Only the balancing of penalties and crimes. You can win something and be morally wrong, or lose and be righteous. He views things in a way only he can see.
Seraphina murmured softly.
Oh, and we've been hired to find him.
Licking his tongue, Gus realized it didn't actually matter whether Retribution was a good guy or a bad guy. If the Silent One was the reason the world seemed to get worse every year, then the answer was to remove him. That meant getting the originator back.
And that means finding Retribution. Well, think you can fit your pretty self into the web and pop the Fed database open for me? See what they have on him?
Gus asked, moving the hand on Seraphina's back to her chair. He had the impression she was going to turn in a second.
Of course I can,
Seraphina said, spinning her chair hard back to face her computer.
That's easier than cracking into a grocery store at this point, especially since I'm responsible for what little security the Fed has. Really, Gustavus, you'll need to give me something harder than that to challenge me.
Smirking, Gus moved his hand to the top of Seraphina's head, resting his forearm against her chair.
Oh, something that'll challenge you, huh? Find out who my mother's parents are,
declared Gus.
You do that, and I'll give you anything you damn well want.
Seraphina made no noise to signify she'd heard him. She was already busily working her way through several different screens, typing in credentials and passwords with her left hand. 30 seconds after he'd asked for her help, she sat back in her chair again.
And in. I mean, really, it's not as if I hid the backdoor credentials. They're right there, and listed as third-party vendor assistance. But someone should still check them,
said Seraphina. She didn't turn toward him as she spoke. She just stared at the main screen, his hand resting atop her head.
Great. Look into Retribution for me. See what you can find out.
Gus murmured, giving Seraphina a pat on the head.
I'm going to go check in on Melody and see if she's done yet.
All right, don't forget to feed Chloe. The last message I got from her said she was waiting for you.
Seraphina reminded him, her hands moving back to her keyboard and mouse.
Damn, that's right. I did promise to feed her.
Realizing he'd be better off taking care of Chloe now rather than later, Gus headed over to the bedroom. Tapping on it twice, he stood there.
Just go inside. She already heard you in here talking. Either she's ready for you, or she's not and wants you to go in and be surprised.
Seraphina said as her fingers continued to rapidly assault her keyboard. Looking back to the spirit of knowledge in the corner as she worked at her keyboard, Gus had to wonder about her and why she was here. He didn't know her that well. Liked her well enough, but didn't really know her. Melody had just claimed her and moved on, without much of a word about it. In this case, though, Seraphina was right. Chloe had likely heard him talking and had already gotten ready, or wanted him to just come in. Not to surprise her, but to be surprised. Chloe hadn't done much to hide the fact that she thirsted for his blood and lusted for him in bed. Opening the door, Gus stepped into the bedroom. The two twin beds were set against one wall, with matching nightstands beside them. Each side of the room had a dresser. Off to one side were a walk-in closet and a bathroom with a shower. He'd briefly considered trying to take the basement as office space, but Melody had assured him that he could use her own office as his if he needed it. Chloe lay under a black sheet. Her arms, upper chest, and shoulders were all nude and uncovered. The sheet was just barely draped over her breasts. Her bright blonde hair was only slightly curly right now, as apparently she'd straightened it again recently. It was all a little messy and lay tousled around her head in small waves. Sky blue eyes watched him intently with her blonde brows drawn down over them. The smattering of freckles across her cheeks and the bridge of her nose were a sharp contrast given the fact that she was the palest vampire Gus had ever seen. Glaring at Gus from her bed, her arms folded over her chest, she was clearly unhappy.
"You ruined it, Sarah!"
Chloe yelled towards the still open doorway.
"I made it easier for you. Now he knows you wanted him to see you like that and that you want to feed from him in the nude,"
Serafina called back.
"You're welcome."
For the first time in a very long time, Gus watched as Chloe flushed a deep, dark red. Her face was such a bright red that he wondered if she was even breathing.
Shut the door,
Chloe grumbled, pointing with one hand.
"Feed in the nude, huh? Well, that's not so bad. Not the first time I've heard of it either. Must be a vampire thing, I guess."
Closing the door, Gus started to roll up his left sleeve.
"It's fine. Doesn't bother me,"
assured Gus.
"You want to be nude, that is."
"It doesn't?"
Chloe asked, sounding somewhat surprised.
No. You're going to be the next contract celebration after Janelle, which means I'll be seeing a lot of you in the nude,"
Gus replied, coming over to the side of her bed. Sitting down on the corner by the pillow, he put his back to the wall and then held his arm out to her.
"Would you like to do the honors?"
He knew for a fact she had a blade in her nightstand drawer. He'd seen it the last time he was looking for the UV cream for her.
"I suppose that's a good point. Though I hope you'll be doing more than just seeing me in the nude,"
Chloe groused, leaning over to open the drawer and reaching inside.
"That's the plan, Miss Wayne,"
Gus said with a smirk, unable to help himself.
"Though you might have wished I'd thrown you in the back seat on that stakeout after all. Trish is, quite demanding."
"Well, we'll see about that,"
Chloe grumbled, coming back toward Gus. Then she snuggled up to his side, took his arm, and delicately laid the tip of the blade to his flesh. Moving it fractionally, she cut along the exact spot where she always fed from him. Blood immediately began to well up.
"Oh, it smells wonderful. I'm so hungry. No movies or TV this time. I just want to enjoy it. Enjoy being with you,"
Chloe said, kicking off the sheet and then grabbing Gus's arm. Pulling it up to her mouth, she began to drink from him directly, completely naked. A chime from his pocket signaled that he'd just gotten a text message. Getting comfortable, since it seemed likely Chloe really wanted to sip at him today, Gus pulled out his phone. Unlocking it, he found the messaging app and flicked it open. It was a new text from a number he didn't know. Tapping it open, he read the contents.
"Gus, I'm terribly disappointed in you. I went through all the trouble of going state's evidence, turning everything over and joining the Fed, just to find out you've left. That's terribly rude. On top of all of that, you apparently have a harem and are all bound to a contractor. Do you know how hard it's going to be to convince your contractor to take me on? Dinner, tomorrow, same restaurant as last time. I already booked reservations. You owe me."
By the end of the message, Gus knew exactly who had sent it. Dunyasha, the vampire coven leader he'd managed to turn to working with the Fed.
Well, that's rather direct. I'll have to...
A second message popped into view, moving the original upward. I've reached out to Melody and confirmed the dinner date as well. She said it wasn't a problem and apologized for your behavior. I like her. See you tomorrow. Closing his eyes, Gus rested his head against the wall and thumbed the power button on his phone, locking it. That was honestly the last thing he wanted to do, but he figured Melody had a plan. That, or she wanted something from Dunyasha, which meant she'd use Gus accordingly. He didn't think she'd allow any funny business with Dunyasha, or encourage any, for that matter, for which he was thankful, but he still didn't like being used as bait for something like this. Pushing his phone back into his pocket, Gus looked down at the naked vampire at his side. She was nuzzling his arm as she drank from him, her lips and tongue pulling at his flesh and coercing more blood to flow than normal.
Certainly not how I envisioned my life. Then again, never thought I'd make it out of the desert, let alone get back stateside and have a career.
Gus thought about that for several seconds.
Or a wife, I guess. Several wives. Actually, I have seven. Yeah, seven.
Gus's phone vibrated once more, pulling his attention away from his thoughts. Lifting his phone up, he looked at the screen and unlocked it. A new message had arrived, though this one was from Janelle. Raising his eyebrows, Gus tapped it open.
I'm coming home the day after tomorrow, a little earlier than we originally expected, but I'm quite excited about it. That, and it'll be nice to retire. Never thought much of being a homemaker, but I think I can handle this. Melody seems to think we'll constantly be busy, however, working case to case. I think it'll be more like what I'm used to. One thing to worry about at a time, a lot of dickering around, and then hurry up and wait. I'll use this time to practice all the skills I'll need to be an effective homemaker for you. After all, you're my clan now, my family, and I really can't wait to introduce you to a number of elven rituals you'll need to observe with me to finalize our marriage contract. This will occur before the group contract festival, as Mel calls it. For you and I alone. Look forward to it, Gus. I'm going to be a very generous clan head for you.
At the bottom of the message was an attached picture. Tapping it and hoping it wasn't anything like the things Mel sent him, Gus was surprised. It was somehow worse than any of those in its own way. Janelle was standing in front of a mirror in a beautiful business suit, her uniform resting at her feet in a prearranged pile. Her ash-blonde hair was loose, the short length hanging down just past her ghostly purple eyes. She was chewing at her lower lip with one side of her mouth, her beautiful features looking straight into the camera. Her free hand was pulling the top of her blouse down and revealing just a bit of skin, but not enough to actually show anything. Gus couldn't deny there was a sensuality to the well-thought-out and planned photograph. He liked it quite a bit.
Ah, so you're more into the teasing and subtle overtures than the direct, stick-it-in-here pictures that Melody sends. I understand. I shall endeavor to provide you with some of those.
Indali said from the dark corner of his mind where she always dwelt now. Gus was still surprised at how he could hold his connection with Indali given the distance. Since her contract binding, they hadn't yet found the maximum range.
After you take me to the range, fire me a lot, take me back home, break me down, and then clean me, that is. And you're doing that tonight, by the way. We haven't gone shooting in a day or two. Also, I picked up the mail today. All the permits required for you to carry me around as a civilian already. You're putting your holster back on and wearing me around again.
Puffing his cheeks out at the thought, Gus couldn't even pretend that his life was anything like it used to be anymore. And he didn't care. When he was being honest with himself, he enjoyed his life.
All right, fine. I'll grab the holster and get you back where you belong. And I'm going to leave you in pieces overnight tonight. Put you together in the morning. You're too needy sometimes if I put you back together too quickly.
Gus sent back. The last time he'd taken her out, fired her, and cleaned her, she'd gotten incredibly needy and sappy, to the point that she'd shown up in her projection and demanded to be in his presence. Indali needed a little time to cool down before he put her back together, he'd learned.
Wonderful. I look forward to it. Thank you for learning my needs.
Chapter 3, Vermilion Dreams. Sitting at the restaurant table, Gus felt strange. Dunyasha was late, only by 5 minutes, but she was still late. It didn't fit with her personality at all, not any part of her mindset that he knew of. In fact, he was actually starting to get nervous. There were really only two paths from here that this could fall under. First was that she'd set him up and he was about to be attacked again, just like the last time he went to dinner with Dunyasha.
She didn't set us up, though. She was just as much a victim as we were. In fact, we weren't even the target,
Indali argued.
Fine, fine, you're not wrong,
Gus admitted, reaching into his jacket to run a finger over Indali's handle. He felt better having her on his person again.
Just a little unnerved.
I think your second thought is more correct. Something happened. Something that prevented her from texting you. Because I think she would have by now,
Indali continued, though her voice had an odd tinge to it.
Stop fondling me already.
Realizing he was casually stroking Indali from frame to the butt of her handle, Gus pulled his hand out of his jacket.
It's not that I mind. In fact, we both know I enjoy it. It just looks odd right now,
Indali quickly added. She was definitely correct. A man with his hand inside his jacket at an empty table didn't look quite right.
If she doesn't show up, we can go to the firing range again. I think I'd like to be there in my projection as well. Talk to you face to face,
Indali offered. Thinking about that, Gus realized that wouldn't be a bad idea. He did enjoy the shooting range, and going with someone was always a plus.
Sure, we can... Hey, Gussie, miss me?
Asked Mark as he sat down across the table. Dressed in the fed suit that he often wore now, Mark was exactly as Gus remembered him last. Still the perfect icon of what people would expect of a fed agent. Tall, dark hair, blue eyes, muscular, handsome, and with an air of danger around him. Gus couldn't deny that Mark was a handsome man and could likely pull most women in with a smile. To Gus, Mark Eric had, for the longest time, been the only man outside his family on the planet that Gus would willingly lay down his life for. The only man who'd walked out of the desert with him, propped him up when he needed it, and gotten him back onto a stable track in his life. He owed Mark deeply.
I did, Dar. I did. And I'm not against going to dinner with you, but... You're not as pretty as the person I was expecting,
Gus said casually with a smirk.
What? I'm definitely as pretty as Dunyasha, Mark said, looking offended. Well, she's got me beat on a figure. I mean, wow. But I'm just as pretty. Finn's prettier than you are, too,
Gus said, putting his elbow on the table and resting his chin in his hand.
Finn is definitely prettier.
Mark said, relaxing in his chair. Then he chuckled.
She wants me to say thanks for dinner last week. Wants to invite you and everyone over on, Monday? Yeah, Monday. Dinner. She's planning on cooking up a storm. Megan'll be there too.
Gus winced at the idea of Megan being dragged around from parent to parent. But that's how a kid's life would go when their parents divorced. And Mark didn't seem to be looking back in any way, shape, or form. He wasn't just running after his boss, the beautiful siren known as Finn Dresch, but sprinting alongside her. They were in lockstep and dashing ahead as far and as fast as they could, with Finn already being pregnant, in fact. If Gus had to be honest, he actually liked Finn. She fit Mark well, but he'd thought Kelly had too.
Sure, not a problem. We can come over, I'm sure. And knowing you, Thur, you already asked Mel. Are we going?
Gus asked.
Yep,
Mark admitted with a grin.
Apparently your family is bringing the appetizers and dessert.
Snorting, Gus nodded his head. It sounded about right. It didn't bother him either.
Is Dunyasha okay?
Gus asked, getting straight to the heart of the issue. With Mark here, it meant that Dunyasha had either done something or something was done to her. Mark winced at that, his eyes still holding Gus's.
No, she's not. Someone tried to kill her about an hour ago when she left the house,
Mark murmured.
She...
A waiter appeared at their side, looming over both Gus and Mark. Before the waiter could open his mouth, Gus had already sunk a thread of power into the dark corners of the man's mind. Reading the thoughts and intentions there, even as Indali practically leapt into Gus's palm, he found nothing sinister. Just a young idiot who couldn't read the mood and had walked up to two men who likely weren't radiating a welcome presence.
Could I?
I'll have the chicken parmigiana. I'll also need an order of steak Diane. If you don't mind, I'll need both to go, so just box them up,
Mark said with an easy smile, looking up at the waiter.
My husband will have the barbecue burger with onion rings. I know, it's odd to come here for such a thing, but what am I gonna do? I love him, and he treats me well. Also, make that burger to go. We won't be able to stay, but here's my card to cover everything.
Mark had already pulled out a credit card and was holding it up to the waiter. The waiter looked from Mark to Gus, back to Mark, then took the card and left. Letting go of Indali, Gus huffed and looked at Mark.
What? He wouldn't believe we're not married if I just called you my boyfriend,
Mark said defensively.
And besides, we'd make a cute couple. Now, Dunyasha, she's all right, but she's not. She's in critical condition in the Fed hospital. Same one I was at. Stable, but critical.
Gus ground his teeth together, his jaw flexing as he chewed on nothing.
Yes, you can visit her. I've already given approval for you to go see her,
admitted Mark.
But was she working on anything for you? Was that why you were meeting her? I only knew to come here because she told me you were here before she went in for surgery. No, it was just dinner,
Gus said, and pulled out his phone quickly. Unlocking it, he flipped over to Dunyasha's message history and held it out to Mark.
She just wanted to have dinner. She asked me out, that's all.
Mark glanced down at the message, then looked up to Gus. Then he shrugged his shoulders and grinned.
No need to prove it, Gussie. You know I love you. I trust you. If I could have your babies, I would. I'd cheat on whoever I was with just to make you smile and give you endless children,
Mark said, leaning back in his seat. Frowning and feeling off base, Gus let his phone sink to the table.
You're very strange sometimes, Dar,
Gus said finally.
And I mean that as someone who truly cares about you.
Oh, I love it when you get mushy with me. And no, I'm not that strange. Not really, at least. I just have a better grasp on reality than you do,
Mark said and tapped his fingers against the table.
Like the fact that you're going to see Dunyasha after this. And the burger isn't actually for you. It's for your partner who's waiting out in the car.
My Partner? Repeated Gus.
He hadn't asked anyone to come along with him. He actually trusted Dunyasha.
What? Oh. Oh. Well, geez, now I just look like a stalker myself. Huh,
Mark said with a chuckle.
Serafina, you know, the tech genius you stole from me, is outside waiting in a car. She clearly doesn't quite understand how a stakeout should be conducted, but she's out there. Her glasses really reflect the screen on her phone. Makes her stand out.
Sighing, Gus put a hand to his head and contemplated the situation. It sounded like Chloe had been paying attention to his texts and had told Serafina. Or Serafina had hacked into his phone and read his messages. When he thought about it, the latter seemed more likely.
I can have your car taken back to your house. I had a driver bring me here,
Mark said with a wide smile.
It'll give me a chance to drop off Chloe's official pardon paperwork as well. She's a free lady starting today, completely in the clear. If she suddenly divorces you, though, oh, I'm gonna be so angry. Well, actually, never mind. I don't have to do anything if she does that. Melody'll handle it. I mean, it's not like she hadn't killed people and disposed of bodies before. That, and I can give Mel back a platter. Was rather nice of her to wrap up leftovers for us like that. Was delicious. Finn caught me at 2 a.m. dancing in the kitchen that night while eating.
The conversation was changing far too fast for Gus. He felt like he was still at the part where Serafina was watching over him from her car outside. Pulling his phone back, he looked at the screen. Flicking it open to his message history with Serafina, he tapped in a message.
I know you're out there. I'm bringing you dinner. Don't go anywhere. You can eat it while I drive us over to the hospital. Dunyasha was hurt. I want to see her and see if there's anything I can do for her. You want a drink with your meal?
Gus hit send and looked back at Mark.
And that's about when Finn stole the fork and ate it all herself. I mean, I know she's pregnant, but isn't it too early for her to start eating everything? It was mine. I'd heated it up for myself,
complained Mark.
Then, to top it all off, she found my cookie stash. I went to get one last night, and they were all gone. How does a grown siren eat two packages of cookies in one night? Huh? Oh, I told her where all your stashes were,
Gus said with a chuckle.
Remember all those condoms? Yeah, you're welcome. I also sent her all the photos I had from our deployment. You did?
Mark asked, his voice growing quite a bit more subdued.
Uh-huh. And the one with the dress? That one, too. She thought you were very progressive. Oh, gosh, that's not fair. They were just condoms, and there isn't a room in my house that doesn't have them somewhere. They're everywhere, because Melody decided that during the 1 week she isn't on birth control, the mood could strike her at any time. I blame you.
Mark held a hand out at Gus.
What the shit? You should be thanking me, not blaming me. Man, I need a harem. I'd just be at it all day. So deep in women. So deep. Need four houses. Huh. Finn won't even let me talk about it.
Mark grumbled, folding his arms across his chest.
The one time I brought up you and Mel and your marriage, she just stared at me. Stared at me, and then finally said, Mark, I'm the only woman in your life. I'll not tolerate others. And that was it. I mean, really now. I could make her feel special, even if I was on wife number 94.
Gus only shook his head, grinning. There was no way he could ever really be angry at Mark, or even annoyed. Gus's phone vibrated in his hand, causing him to glance down at it.
Okay. Can I just have water? I need to cut down on sugar where I can. Can I have salt as well? There's never enough salt.
Smirking, Gus nodded his head and typed in his reply, even as Mark continued to complain about not having a harem. Walking up to the private room in the ICU ward where Dunyasha was supposed to be, Gus looked at the two men in suits in front of the door.
Gustavus Hellstrom, here to see Dunyasha. I'm a friend of Mark Eric and Dunyasha both,
Gus said, then shrugged his shoulders.
And Finn Dresch, too.
The two agents staring at Gus had a nearly identical reaction. Both of them reached for the door to open it.
Of course, said the first. Be as quiet as you can. Please respect her health. She's very drugged up,
said the second. Nodding his head in thanks, Gus walked into the hospital room. A series of machines were whirring and beeping away. Sitting in a bed in the middle of all those machines was Dunyasha. Her black hair was messy and ragged-looking. Only one dark brown eye was visible, but it was watching Gus. He'd once thought she looked like the type of beautiful woman who could climb her way to the top of a corporate ladder or sell a million-dollar home on her looks and charm alone. The reason only one of her eyes was open was that a bandage covered one part of her face and her other eye. She was nearly nude, given the number of things attached to her skin all across her body. The minimum of modesty had been afforded to her. A gown, barely covering her once well-developed figure. Though from what he could see of her, she was chewed up from what appeared to be fire. A lot of her skin had an angry, ugly redness to it that didn't look good at all.
Gus,
croaked the vampire, slightly turning her face away.
No, don't want you here. Too bad. You stood me up. Had to come find my date,
Gus said, coming over to her.
And now that I've found her, I plan on spending the evening with her.
Dunyasha made an ugly noise at that, somewhere between a chuckle and a groan.
Not how I wanted our evening to go,
hissed the vampire.
Yeah, I'm sure your pretty self had hoped a partner feed from me. Likely after sex,
Gus said, coming to stand beside her bed.
Before sex, and then again after, then sex again,
admitted Dunyasha, slowly turning her face back to him.
Not anymore, though.
Now that he was closer, he could see there were likely more burns under that bandage. The barest hint of red streaked out from under it, along with what looked like some greasy substance.
Not so pretty now,
said Dunyasha, then raised a hand and pulled back part of the bandage.
No amount of blood or magic will heal this.
The covered eye wasn't damaged. It was missing. Half of her face was burnt quite badly, to the point that she looked like a partially melted candle. All the hair on that side of her head was also gone, and likely wasn't going to return given the amount of scar tissue that would develop. Gus didn't recoil from her. Instead, he inspected the damage, even going so far as to take the edge of the bandage from her and hold it back. Peering into the empty socket, he could see that the interior had been scooped clean, likely by the doctors looking to give her a chance to heal cleanly. Vampire regeneration could be a tricky thing. If it went wrong, an eyeball could have regrown itself inside her skull, or she could have grown back three, and it was just as likely that it would come out perfectly. There just wasn't a way to tell or predict such a thing when it came to this. So the medical recourse chosen was to remove the eye entirely and give her a chance to heal without it.
Oh, I don't know about that. I think you'll look rather sexy with an eye patch,
Gus murmured.
Ex-coven leader turned Fed agent and dangerous blood mage. Definitely eye patch worthy. As to the skin, I think you underestimate your own power as a blood mage. Chloe was quite adamant with me on the way over that all you need is some higher-powered blood to get you going, no matter how bad you hurt.
Dunyasha grunted at that, pulling her head away, the bandage falling back into place.
I'm afraid I won't be getting much in the way of high-powered blood anytime soon. I burned all my old contacts to get into the Fed to chase you, muttered Dunyasha.
Well, let's talk about that,
Gus said, looking around the room. He spotted a stool and dragged it over, placing it next to Dunyasha's bed. Using this as an opportunity to poke into her head, Gus picked up the thread he'd left inside her mind previously while he dragged the stool over. Those small filaments could take years to dissolve on their own.
You really joined the Fed just to chase me?
Gus asked as he sat down and looked at her. In her head, he could practically see her mind run around in a short pan.